everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Lesbian Mommies Radio. I'm your host, Elizabeth Kaliva. Thank you for tuning in tonight, especially after my last two shows. I wanted to apologize because those shows, the audio quality, at least coming from me, my guest sounded great, but I just sounded like poop. So I just wanted to apologize for that. I've been working with Blog Talk Radio for 2 weeks now on sound issues. And in fact, I thought I had it handled. And right before the show started, it kicked me off the system. And so now I'm calling in on my phone. And I know this doesn't sound as good as the digital system online. So I apologize for that. But it's workable. I know it's workable. So we're going to roll with it. Tonight, we're examining the decision-making process on whether to parent or not. And this is actually a topic suggestion a few months ago by one of our listeners, Christina. So I'm super happy to be doing this show because I know this has been a really tough choice for her and her wife. And the choice to be parents it's a really big one. It requires a lot of sacrifice. There's sacrifice of career. There's an impact on your relationship. There's the inability just to do whatever you want to do whenever you want to do it. I know it's just a big choice. Your life completely alters when children come into the picture. And so for some of us, that can be a really tough call. So tonight's guest is Tara Renton. She is the director, writer, and producer of the documentary Generation Baby Buster, and she really understands this quandary. And she made this movie to really take an honest look at some of the sacrifices of parenthood, the joys and fulfillment of parenthood. And one of the parts that I really appreciated, she starts examining the stereotypes of parenthood, being a super mom. So I'm really looking forward to getting into that with Tara tonight. And just a note to everyone, Tara is in a straight relationship, so we're not going to be talking about lesbian-specific decisions like donor selection and insemination methods. Rather, we're going to be talking about some higher level considerations that pertain to all of us that we can all relate to. So I hope you enjoy it. I know it'll at the very least give you some food for thought. And just one quick announcement. In a couple of weeks, I have Jamie Harmon on the show. She is a single lesbian mom of a beautiful little boy, Jaden. Jaden actually has Down syndrome. I found Jamie on Instagram. I have never reached out to a guest on Instagram before, but it worked out. I read her story. She was featured in some, it was like the Promote Love Project or something like this, and it shared her story of her and Jaden. It was just so sweet and awesome, and I thought it would be a good story to share. Having a special needs child is definitely a different experience than having a non-special needs child, and I thought it would be awesome to highlight her story. So Jamie's going to be on in a couple weeks, so stay tuned for that. All right, let me introduce Tara Renton. With an undergraduate degree in cultural studies from McGill University and a master's degree in journalism from the University of Western Ontario, Tara is a Gemini Award-winning producer and journalist. After working in the business for several years, she created Pterodactyl Productions, Inc. in order to develop television and film content devoted to women's issues that does not involve makeovers, baking, or home decor. I love it. Tara teamed up with world-class editor and all-around great guy Jonathan Stewart, whom she worked with in Toronto on the internationally successful adventure show Man Tracker, to create Generation Baby Buster. She currently resides once again in her hometown of Calgary, where she is rediscovering floating down the Elbow River, drinking beers at the ship, and talking to complete strangers because they're just so friendly. Tara, welcome to Lesbian Mommies Radio.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. All right, so I just want to say I love the movie. It was so good. It definitely gave me a lot to think about. And I didn't, like, for me, the decision to have kids was easy. I knew that's what I wanted to do. But 2 years later, when my wife and I still haven't gotten pregnant or haven't had a pregnancy that has stuck, that's when I started reconsidering because I thought, well, you know what? If I don't have kids, I get to have, you know, I get to travel all the time and I get to have more money and I get to have a lot more freedom. So it was awesome to look at those things in your movie and then also some of the other stuff that you looked into, which we'll talk about later. But I wanted to just have you start us off by talking about why you made the movie.
Well, I was definitely in a place where this was a big question for me and for kind of people in my immediate atmosphere, my friends, and we were all kind of early 30s and really having a good time. I'd say you have a lot of freedom at that stage. A lot of times your career's, you've made your decision on what you're doing with your life, and you have a little bit of financial stability and some money for maybe travel or even just nights out, dinners. And everything's going so well, and you get this sense that if you take that step, everything will change. And people always say, oh, everything changes. And I think it's true. And so it's hard to imagine the change. And for some people, when they just know that they really want to have children, they don't think about that. They're just like, this is the next step, and I'm so excited. But if you aren't sure, then all of the things that you have and enjoy and those freedoms, you worry about how you'll feel when there's a forced change. So I thought, but then I started to notice also that a lot of people who kept delaying this decision, because it's easy to just say, well, I'm not ready yet. But as you know, having children isn't as easy as just deciding to.
Nope.
And yep. It can be difficult, and it can take years, and it also, as you get older, gets harder. And so I felt like it was important to make the decision. And so in order to make the decision one way or the other, and to feel good about that, I had to really think about all of the issues. And that's kind of how the documentary came about, is I just had all these books, because I'm like, oh, I should read a bit more into this. And I started thinking, you know, people don't realize a lot of this information, and there's so many great writers and professors and people writing and thinking about this. I would love to talk to them. And so that's kind of how it evolved.
That's awesome. I love it. And the interviews were so good. Like, you just covered so many bases, and I definitely want to hit on some key points as we talk about it. And one of the first ones I wanted to talk about was The Price of Motherhood. And I know that was one of the book titles of one of your interviewees. And it's just really looking at the sacrifices we make. There's the sacrifice with career. We know that it was like our mother's generation in the 60s and 70s that were fighting for the ability to get out of the home and to work. And then, you know, so now we're doing it all. We're working, we're having parents and are having kids, and usually it's the career that suffers. I think it was Anne Crittenden that talked about the mommy tax, and I thought that was really appropriate, because it really does impact your income. You know, even when you go back to work, you have time off, and that impacts your income and your upward mobility, I guess. So talk a little bit about that for you. Like, how did that come into play in your decision-making process? What did you get out of those interviews specifically about kind of the price we pay as mothers when it comes to career?
Well, I think a huge thing, one of the main problems is that the same time where it's kind of so important for our career is also the time when our bodies are suited to having children, or it's going to, mm-hmm. our 30s are kind of when the families are often started. And it's also really when you're making a lot of the important career strides. And taking a big chunk out of that time is penalized. I mean, some people may be able to jump back in, but they may find that their colleagues that were at the same place as them 5 years before, or even 2 years before, are at a different place and have been promoted or have made different connections. And even it even starts in pregnancy, and that wasn't really something that I talked about as much then, but I've since learned there's a lot of discrimination even against pregnant women. And so what ends up happening is you just kind of are pushed aside, and then there are assumptions when you come back that you're not going to be fully committed, that your child is always going to come first. And a lot of times that's not true, because as parents know, multitasking and working very efficiently is actually something that parents can excel at. And I think it's a learned skill. But there's definitely those attitudes. And there's also, as Sylviane Hewitt talked a lot about, there are not a lot of good ways to kind of jump out and jump back in or come back part-time or the way that a lot of professions are set up, that taking that time off is there's no flexibility. And so it's kind of all or nothing for a lot of people, and they end up sacrificing something that they love because they have to, not because they necessarily want to. They'd like to keep on with their job, but they can't even manage to do it.
Yeah, I think it was Sylviane Hewlett that also talked about interviewing some like really, really powerful women, and then she noted that none of them had children. Like, that was interesting to think about.
Yeah, it seems that almost, I mean, there are very few women kind of in those top high positions, especially, I'd say, I mean, now there seem to be a few more CEOs and such, but a lot of the really high-achieving women don't have children, and they never would have had time to get to the place where they are. And, of course, there was an assumption that they didn't have a partner at home basically helping them out, because oftentimes men actually do better when they have a partner at home helping with that side of things. And so,
Yeah, it's funny, right when you said that, it made me think of, I had an OBGYN back in the day who, she was a doctor, and her husband stayed home with the kids, and that's how they worked it.
Yeah.
I was like, that's awesome.
Yeah, and good friends of mine now, she's a doctor and he's a teacher and he's, you know, the primary parent, absolutely.
Yeah.
And and that's one of the things that looking towards the future, and Gillian Ranson, she wrote Against the Grain, and she was finding that couples that were kind of writing their own, carving their own paths and making things work for them, were having the most success, just in terms of it being a happier, more balanced environment. And balance was always something that I was looking for. Like, where's the balance? Well, how can everyone be happy in this situation? And she was finding that people who said, hey, well, who wants to be home? Or maybe we both work part-time and we both parent part-time. Or maybe we I make more money, so I'll do it for now. And she actually found that gay couples were often more successful in finding balance, because she found that the chores breakdown was often more equal.
Interesting.
And so there wasn't as much of an assumption that, you know, one partner versus the other would take the double shift or more responsibility. There was more sharing of both work and, like, home work and outside the home interests and work.
That's interesting. Yeah, and like you were saying, it's like the structure that's set up in our society doesn't facilitate like the balance you're talking about. And it seems one of the cool things that I've noticed is with the internet so big and internet businesses, there's so many moms that are working from home doing something online, so they can completely set their own schedule. It gives them so much more freedom. And it should be, I should say, moms and dads, it doesn't matter. But it just seems like there's now, luckily with the internet, there's got a lot more ability to create a balanced life. Because like with my job at 9 to 5, you know, you kind of have to be there in those hours. And if you want to move up, they kind of expect you to work 50 hours a week. And, you know, the moms I know, one of them in particular that's also an engineer, she works only 4 days a week. And that definitely impacts her career, you know. So it seems like you said, kind of breaking out of this mold that we're in gives you the opportunity to create something, carve your own path and create something that works.
For sure.
Good point.
And, as one thing, like Dana Glaser, who was kind of the dad voice, because he did a documentary about stay-at-home dads, and he talked about FaceTime and how it's so important for you to be, like, appear to be hardworking, and that has to do with hours.
Yeah.
And there's almost this, like, bragging rights to be like, look how hard I work, and I'm the first one here and then the last one here, and I'm always here for you. And I think that's a very North American thing, because I lived in Europe for 5 years, and when we just moved back, and we started to notice it right away, this idea that you're supposed to be in the office, and if you're there, you're hardworking. Whereas when we were living in Spain, it was, why are you still here? Don't you have something better to do? But people also worked very hard when they were at work. They weren't checking their Facebook and planning the barbecue for the weekend. And they were actually working because they wanted to be out at a reasonable hour. And there was more of a acceptance that people would take a month off in August and reconnect with their families, and they would take their holidays, whereas people here, they don't even take holidays. Sometimes people are forced to take their vacations. And a lot of times they only have 2 weeks vacation.
Yeah, exactly.
Criminal.
I know. Oh, I know it's true. But the Europeans have definitely figured out the work-life balance.
Yeah.
We Americans are way too crazy about work, unfortunately. And that's actually brings me to one of my other questions, which was the financial side of things. I liked that Elizabeth Badinger mentioned that a stay-at-home mom puts women at risk of economic dependence. And that was something I really considered in my own life, because my wife does better than me, and she loves, I actually don't like my job. She loves her job. So we kind of had this understanding that when we had kids, I would probably be the one that stays home, at least initially, and does that early duty of raising the kids. But then I thought about, you know, I project myself into the future if this relationship doesn't work out, and I haven't worked for whoever, you know, 10 years, where does that leave me? You know, it's a scary situation to put yourself in as a mom that doesn't work, because you are at risk of economic dependence at some point. And, you know, hopefully that doesn't happen, but that's something we have to think about, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, when these partnerships split up, it's often very unfair to the person who is doing the work at home, because it's not, there isn't a value placed on it, because there's no dollar sign. And just a lot of my experts said, we, for some reason, we don't put a value on this, even though these parents at home are raising the future generation, which are going to, you know, be paying our pensions, and they're going to be our workers of the future, and we need them, and we understand that it's a something that we need. We don't put any value on it, and there's been a lot of devaluing, I would say, of stay-at-home parents and parenting in general. It's not cool. It's not the career. That's what's sexy, and unfortunately, a lot of the people doing that work aren't getting, I don't think, the respect that they deserve, and the courts also see it that way. And a lot of times, despite what you hear, you often, you know, in the media, it's, she got everything in the divorce. That's not really, that's
right,
not the case.
Right.
And the people who are most at risk of poverty are single mothers.
Yeah.
So
I remember that comment.
It is a frightening thing, and it is frightening, and it is hard. And, I mean, also Elizabeth Badinter, she talked a lot about also losing kind of that independence as a woman, which I think with the intensive parenting style. And she doesn't really talk about whether you're working or you're not. It was more about just maintaining a personal identity where you still had your hobbies and your friends and your ability to pursue your interests as a woman. And so she really advocated to not lose all that, to give everything to the child, because once they've grown, or if your relationship splits up, or you need to still have things that you fostered for you. So,
yeah, absolutely. And that kind of, you know, the whole discussion that you had in the movie about fitting in as moms and the heaviness of the maternal demands these days. You know, and before, somebody was talking about in the movie before, it was just like, you know, you kept them alive. They're fed, they have clothes, they have shelter, and that was a lot of what you did. And now it's like they need to go to this cognitive development program, and, you know, it's Einstein music for babies, and they're in gymnastics and ballet and horseback riding and all of these things. And as you just, like, all you do as a mom is literally cater to your kid the whole time. And so, yeah, like you're talking about having that, maintaining that identity, it seems like to be a mom these days is to devote yourself completely to your children. And that's a big sacrifice too.
Yeah, well, and I think Hera Moreno, she's an editor at large for Psychology Today, and she found that it wasn't doing the kids any favors either, that a lot of these kids weren't then able to cope. They had a lot of problems when they kind of went away from home or went off to university, and they crumbled, and they couldn't, without their parents' intervention and help. They weren't able to make their own decisions and cope with failure. That was a big one. And we're starting to see some of this intensive parenting turn around a bit. I just noticed in articles recently, there's a bit more of, well, we do need to raise them with lots of love, but also sense of independence and the ability to fail and all of this. But for so long, it was you have to smooth out everything for them so that it's all okay. And a lot of these really great people who were staying home had devoted a lot of time maybe to study and education, and then they were like putting those energies into raising their child. And so it was, how can I make their childhood perfect, and how can I teach them as much as I can? And a lot of the kids are overtaxed as well with all their lessons and schooling, and it seems to be overkill.
Totally. Absolutely. I loved Lenore Skenazy. She has a book called, I think, Free Ranging Your Kids. But her whole, I mean, just a great story about letting her, was it like an 8-year-old, go on the subway, find his way home on the subway system in New York, and how she just got fried for sharing that. She was on like some talk show, right? And everyone was calling her like the worst mom in America or something. But her point was so good. It's like, teach them independence, teach them how to think, have them learn how to trust their instincts, you know, trust that they're smart enough. And it just seems like that's so much more of a productive way of raising kids. I mean, you're raising them to be self-sufficient, independent, thoughtful, intelligent adults, you know, and so babying them doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, well, and she just noticed, like, she said we used to all play out in the yard, and yet it actually is safer now for children than it was in the 70s. And, like, you're 45 times more likely to die in a car as a child than you are to be abducted, and yet this fear of a stranger hurting your child on the front lawn is more in people's minds. And just the way, and it's terrible, but anytime anything happens to a child, now the world, you hear about it. And I think people then are just so terrified of all of these possibilities that it then takes away from the childhood that children can have, and also from the lives that parents can have. Because if you always have to be watching your children and feel like you have to be so vigilant and afraid all the time, that's not a great way to feel either. But then, like she said, but then what if something happens to your child also? So that there has to be, you have to be able to, you know, teach them, but then also trust them and trust that they can go to the park, and the park can be a safe place for the community, and if it's filled with other kids, then that's great. And empty parks are just tragic.
So true. I never thought about that. But you're right, and you don't really see a lot of kids there by themselves. There's usually parents there with them. I mean, you know, I guess if you lived in New York City, I probably would maybe be fearful a little bit more, just because, but you know, it's all media, you know, it's what you see on TV. Oh my gosh, you know, New York is a dangerous place, and there's so many, you know, crazy people, or wherever it is, you know, and I think
she lives in Queens.
Queens, right? So it's like, it is, it's so much, I think one of your guests actually talked about it being kind of like it was towards the end, something about it, kind of just how the media really comes into play with so many things about parenting and fear and all that stuff. Oh, yeah, it was actually her. She said, fears are market-driven and created. I thought that was a good point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
There was something else that you said that made me think about, it was a 3-martini play date, Christy Meller's talk.
Oh, she's
I thought
so
that was awesome. You know, because it's like, she said something about that so many people build their life around their kids rather than just bringing their kids into their lives. And rather than giving up the life you love, like really working out life that you have kids and you, like you were saying, you kind of nurture your personal identity. And she talks about raising an adult raising an adult you're going to have rather than raising a child. Like raising an adult you want to hang out with And I thought that was awesome because that is, when you think about it that way, it kind of has a little bit of a shift in context of parenting, you know, because it's when you're just raising a child, there's just so much protection and there's so much fear and you don't want anything to go wrong. And then when you think about, I'm just going to raise this adult that's going to be someone I love to hang out with when I'm older. And that kind of, I don't know, there's a little more freedom in that, at least for me.
Well, and she definitely points out, like, the fun involved. And I think sometimes people are so afraid of doing things wrong or of not doing their best for their children that they get so wrapped up in it that it becomes not fun. And a girlfriend of mine, I mean, she reads so many books and she's always so stressed. And every time her 2.5-year-old has a tantrum, it's something she's doing wrong and she's so stressed. And I just think of, like, 2-year-olds have tantrums. It's just what they do. Sometimes you have to just laugh or, you have to just accept it. But I think there's so much information out there and everyone has an opinion. And anytime you go online and, you know, people can be, oh, if you do that, that's terrible. You're the worst parent ever and you absolutely have to do this. And this is the right strategy and this is the wrong strategy. And as Elizabeth Badinter pointed out, she's like, every 10 years that changes. How you should raise your children changes. And so one of the things I like that Christy just said, you know, it's not rocket science. You figure out what works for your family and for you. And when you can do that and enjoy it, then life's good.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was a good point, like, to remember, like, just the levity and fun of it all.
Well, and yeah, this is a really good point because you hear about the mommy wars, right? Oh, whether it's breastfeeding or it's how you discipline, like, there is a lot of judgment. And I definitely find myself falling into that sometimes. And it was such a good reminder to, like, back off from that. There is no right way to do anything, let alone raise a child. And we all were raised differently. We all have different life experiences. And so it's just going to happen naturally. And, you know, for me, it was a good reminder to, like, we're to all come together as women, support each other. We're all dealing with stuff. You know, parenting is not an easy, and I have no idea because I don't have kids, but I can imagine it's just the toughest job you'll ever have. And just a reminder to be really supportive of each other and give each other the space to be human. And, yeah, just trust, you know, let people do their own thing and trust them.
Well, and that judgment
was
definitely – oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
Oh, that judgment was one of the things that definitely scared me off, and that's kind of something. I mean, I talked to my mom, and she says that definitely wasn't. I mean, there was there. You don't say, oh, well, you're thinking later that child only eats macaroni or stays up all night. But it wasn't something that was a big deal. I mean, now it's
right.
Well, that's not organic or grain fed or gluten free or like there are just so many and
totally.
People don't kind of keep it. Often keep it to themselves, and so you can feel judged for everything you're doing. If you have a bottle and, why aren't you breastfeeding, or why aren't you breastfeeding, like, extended, or why are you using that baby carrier? Didn't you read that that's bad for their hips? And it can just go on and on and on, and so that every time you leave the house, you feel like you're being judged by every other woman. And the funny thing is, a lot of times that it just makes you doubt yourself and feel bad even though you're working so hard. And I think that's something that's so unfortunate. When you go into any of the chat rooms and there's so much judgment about these very small decisions. And like Sarah Moreno pointed out, she's like, the children that need so much, like children that are hungry or children that need help with school and they aren't getting special attention, and yet we worry about things like the baby carrier and the type of, you know, the type of toys, and are they wood only or whatever it is. It's just the focus on things that don't really matter.
Yeah, totally, totally. And I wonder what that is. I mean, is that just a testament to how easy our lives are now that we can fight about material, the toys? I mean, you know, because before,
in a way it is.
Way back, it was life or death to just make it through a winter. And now it's like judging people because of they're getting plastic toys for the kids. So,
it's
really interesting. So now you did end up making the choice to have babies, yes?
Yeah.
And how has that been now? I mean, So you know this whole project for you was this decision making process. You got to the decision, you had babies, and looking back, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so I think because it was such a hard decision, I definitely felt like I made it. I really thought about it for a long time. When we thought, and actually it was harder than we thought, like it took us a long time to have our son. And, of course, it was just kind of as everyone had said, everything changes. But I found it was easier than I anticipated, and I think because you can definitely, and one of the things I learned from all of these experts and from friends and everything was you have to do what works for you. But I also found, like, I was faced with discrimination at work. I was pulled off projects as soon as they found out I was pregnant.
Really?
And, yeah. As soon as they found out, oh, well, we're sending someone else on location for that because they'll need to cover the one when you're on mat leave. And it was just very frustrating.
Wow.
And so I definitely right away started to feel some of the penalties. I also felt like I thought, oh, after 9 months, I'll want to go back to work for sure. And I'll be so bored of being at home, and this was before, that I will want to go back to work by 9 months. That's max. And I didn't feel that way at all. So I think, too, no matter how you think you're going to feel, it's going to surprise you. I stayed away from a lot of the things that I didn't want to be involved in, like some of the mommy groups and stuff. I found weren't for me. I'm still trying to find some parents that are like-minded, and that can be difficult. But I think as everyone said, and this was one of the things that really made me kind of change my mind, was you have to make decisions for you, and you have to think about what's in your best interest and what's going to be there for you in the long run and what you enjoy out of life. And to me, family has always been important, and that's, you know, your career isn't going to tuck you in at night and be there when you're sick. And there are definitely things you have to think about if you really want family to be, or your to have children, then you know that that's going to be your life. Like, there's no take backs, you know? And right away we knew that it was going to be great. So
awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it is a good point to think about. Like you said, that your job's not going to tuck you in at night. Cause I think, you know, I love my life right now. I love my relationship. I love the freedom I have. Like, it's like the prime of my life. And, you know, it doesn't necessarily sound the most appealing to give that all up. And I project myself further out in the future, 20 or 30 years, and when I'm not going to have necessarily all that freedom, even if it's just because my body doesn't work as well, you know. And what am I going to have? And you just think about kids and grandkids and really the pure joy that comes out of family. And for me, you know, that's what propelled me, you know, as I've been in this debate for myself lately, my inability to freaking get pregnant. That's really what keeps propelling me forward, is like looking out into the future and what I want to see then. And I just thought that was a really good point. I remember reading that in your, something similar to that in your, I think it was your director's statement on your website. And it's just a really good point.
Yeah, and I think that people who make the decision to stay child-free are very, very happy with, and like a lot of times their relationships are definitely their families, and a lot of them have children in their life that aren't their children, and they feel like so much more fulfilled in their lives not having that. And I think that's one of the things, and that's definitely where I started off talking to a lot of the child-free people, and the people who are like, we are child-free, yay, like very happily child-free people, and a lot of them have a tough time because people are always, well, why don't you want children, and do you hate children? And they don't hate children. It's just they're very, very happy with their lives and relationships the way that they are. And I think the best thing, and was it that mentioned, oh, Deirdre Mackin, and she said, isn't it wonderful, or Madeleine Kane, that people who don't want children don't have them now.
Yep.
And it is still hard, and there's a lot of questions, and there's some attitude that I think women get when they say, no, I don't want children, I never want them. And but it's definitely becoming more acceptable, and that is a great thing as well.
I know so many women that don't want kids. It's definitely... yeah, like you said, so good that they're not having them, because before it was like you had to, you know, it was just expected of you, and it's great that they are not having kids. And yeah, there's so many people I know that don't want kids. They're like, no, thanks. And I think that's awesome and good for them, because I can definitely appreciate it. I can definitely appreciate what you get out of not having kids. So it is really cool that decision is becoming more accepted for women. And you know, like you said, there's going to be some questioning of that, because for some women, that's such a strong drive still. But for some reason, like, I have a cousin, in fact, she's just young. She's like, I would say, mid-20s maybe, and she knows already, no way, no kids, no thanks.
Yeah.
And it's awesome.
Yeah, well, yeah, I definitely felt like great. I didn't have any drive. There was no drive. There was no, oh, babies, you know. There was not. So it was really like, oh, my, was really thinking on a more... I don't even, like, just actually trying to think about the decision without there being any biological clock that was moving me towards it. And I think that more and more people's focus, well, and that's one of the things Sylvia and Hewlett talks about, our focus as women has been work hard, get an education, build your career, like, see the world if you can, just do all of these things. And really, no one is telling you, in your early 20s, oh, and think about finding a partner and having a family. It's like no one is talking about that. And that's actually one of the things that is, according to Sylvia and Hewlett, she's saying this is kind of hurting women, because a lot of times they're getting to 40 and they're saying, you know what, I never made time for that. And no one told me to. And I was focused on everything else, and I never met a man because I was too busy with my, you know, 2 law degrees and becoming partner. And then they're looking back and saying, I wish that I had carved out a space for that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was Deirdre Mackin that said there's never a good time to have children. And that's a really good point. There never is. And for me, for sure, I didn't want to have kids right away. I wanted to travel, and I wanted to just, like, enjoy life. My mom had her first child at 20 years old, and I just, you know, her whole life, she never, in my, like, growing up and being in my own young adulthood, I looked at my mom as, she never had that time to just be crazy and be young and, you know, travel the world. And but at the same time, now my mom at, gosh, 47, no, wait, because she, yeah, anyway, by 50, we're gone, right? So my mom's still relatively young and being able, I guess 48-ish, relatively young, and she's, like, out traveling the world right now. So
yeah, I was gonna say,
I'm gonna be like, I'm gonna have kids. I mean, by the time my kids graduate from high school, I'm gonna be like almost 50. So I mean, that's something to think about too. But you know, waiting so long, it's like you give up one side or the other, you know.
Yeah, it's true. but that's the other thing that comes into play, that often as we get older, it gets harder, and a lot we're finding that it's becoming, like people say, childless by choice. There's child-free by choice, or, you know, or not by choice. And a lot of times, by the time you're kind of, okay, I'm ready, and it's not biologically possible. And even though, you know, we see all these celebrities with children in their early 40s, and technology, and not only the cost is very, very expensive, but a lot of times the success rates are low, and there's a bit of, I think there's some studies where they ask women, well, when do you think it becomes harder to have children, and people think, oh, like into your 40s, and it's like, no, you may look great and feel great and be in the prime of your life, but that doesn't mean that it's going to be easy to have children. And it's not your mid-40s,
yep.
It's your 30s where things start to really decline. And so not that it's not possible, but it can be very hard. And, I mean, you must know how hard it can be for just everything in your life to have to struggle.
Mm-hmm.
And not that there aren't people struggling to get pregnant in their 20s as well. That's a reality. But it's sometimes making the decision earlier, even though people are the last thing on their mind, it might be a good – I wanted to also kind of put that out there, that it might be worth thinking about for women even
mm-hmm.
in their 20s when they look towards their future.
Yep, absolutely. I have definitely had that thought, like, darn it. My eggs are getting old. I waited too long.
Yeah, and that's
family
size.
People who maybe think, oh, this is great. I would have had, you know, 3 kids and instead of one.
I just had one.
Yeah.
Exactly. I know that the part of the intention of your film anyway, I know it was your own personal journey, but it was to help people really make that choice for themselves, whether to have children or not. And I think you definitely fulfilled on that. You gave people a lot of things to think about that I think were really interesting and really diverse. You tackled like a lot of different angles. I highly, highly, highly recommend the movie. I'm wondering what you would say if someone came to you that's really contemplating, should I have a kid or not? What would be your advice to them?
Oh, well, I would just say really think about it and think about all of, like, really make a list and think about your reasons. Because I think things change in life. Like, I've known people who say, oh, but my career is so great and it's so wonderful and I really need to devote myself to that. And I'd say, okay, so what if they're downsizing and they just lay you off next week? And then...
Right.
You know, the economy's in a slump and you can't get a job and you're trying to get a job in your field and you can't get a job in your field and then you have to take a job doing something you don't love as much or, like, careers, those things can really change. Or same with a relationship. It can be so wonderful. Well, 5 years from now, where will it be? Or, like, there's just a lot of things to think through. And... Yeah, it's hard to say if there was, like, one particular thing because I think there are just so many factors to consider. But I think the big thing is to not let kind of the current climate of parenting influence you if you're really turned off by it. That was one of my main things was I just thought, oh, these parents, like, move to the suburbs, never go out and seem so unhappy, and I don't want that life. Well, you don't have to have that life. You can live downtown with your children and do go to a restaurant if you want and live the way, like, you can make it your own life and continue to do the things that you love to do. It doesn't have to be what other people do. So I think that was one of the things that really made me feel better. And it's definitely true. So that's something I think I would tell people.
Right on. Was there any, as you were speaking, it made me think of, were there any other key insights that you got out of making the film that had you make that choice for yourself to have a baby?
I think just when Deirdre Mackin just said you have to think about where your best interests lie, and...
Mm.
That just for some reason really resonated with me because I just thought sometimes it's easy to get so focused on work and career and success and adventure and all of these sexier things. And sometimes that is definitely worth making a decision to maintain those things, especially when they bring you a lot of joy. But I felt like... In the future, it was the simple things like a big family barbecue and, you know, Christmas and, like, those things that actually really, really meant a lot and were a kind of peaceful in life. And more of that could be a good thing.
Yes, such a great point. I actually just got back from a family reunion. I went to Wisconsin a week and a half ago. It was so beautiful there. But my dad has 7 brothers. And so it was just to have, like, so it was his brothers and then his cousins. It was just this huge reunion. And it just, I just loved the week. I just loved being around family. And there was something there that I really got about that, the value of that. I mean, just, it's, you know, friends are great. I have the most amazing friends and I absolutely love them, but there's something unique about family. And it was just really awesome to spend this time with this big group of people that always, you know, like they go to have a barbecue. So there's a bunch of people. It's like a whole party shows up just with your family, you know, and there was just something really endearing about that. And it really reinforced my decision to have kids and want to have, you know, at least a couple. And it actually turned me on to the idea of having more than that. And I don't think we're going to actually do that. It's a little late, but I can see the draw to having a big family because it's just fun. Family's fun. Mm-hmm. So I love that.
Yeah.
Like you said, the big family barbecue, like there's just nothing like it. It's just great.
Yeah.
I love it.
Special there. Yeah.
Well,
and
it was a really, really, really great movie. Sorry.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, in a kind of a consumer-based culture where everything is buy more, there's something that kind of negates that. And I found when I was used to reading, you know, 4 newspapers in the morning and always being up on everything and just being so wrapped up in the world. And when I had my son, I tuned out completely. Like, I just stopped watching the news and reading the news, and I just played, like, Rafi and was in his world with, like, just, like, little kid books. And, like, oh, this world is really nice. Like, it's really beautiful. There's nothing awful about it, and horrible things aren't happening to people, and the state of politics is not, like, driving me crazy. It's like everything is just really nice, and the doggy found the bone.
Mm-hmm.
and there was something really nice about that, and seeing the world through their eyes, which Madeleine Kane talks about. Seeing the world through a child's eyes is something that you otherwise might not see, and that to me was a huge surprise. And it's a nice, innocent, peaceful, beautiful world, and that was pretty neat.
I love it. I love it. So good. Really, thanks for taking the time to talk about the movie. I really highly, highly recommend it to people. Before we wrap up, is there any, like, final parting words? Anything else you want to share about the film or about where it's going next? Or
what's
your plans with the film?
Yeah, I'm kind of trying to decide, because I think that there's, like, a follow-up to it in a way in terms of the kind of parenting culture. But I also kind of feel like I want to move away from that. So I'm kind of up in the air with what I'm going to do. But I just wanted to say that it was so great to talk to you, because so often people, you know, they watch it and they think about a few things, but I just felt like it was really great to cover so many of the points with these experts, and I'm really glad that you enjoyed it, because I think that the people who have studied this and thought about it and wrote about it, like, they're really experts. And so often in the media, when you're reading stuff, it's like some random person who just has an opinion and not someone who actually studied this for 10 years and devoted their life to really considering it and putting forth, like, great ideas about it. And I actually was criticized for having, like, all these old people in my film, which I thought was quite offensive. So I appreciate that you really enjoyed the experts. And I think that oftentimes going to people who actually know what they're talking about because they've studied it and really, really thought about it is a good way to examine a topic.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, I was talking to some friends about it that I went to dinner with this weekend about the show, and they're definitely excited to watch it. So tell people where they can find it. Is it on your website? Can you get it on Hulu? I was kind of confused.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it's on Hulu.
Okay. And then your website is generationbabybuster.com, right?
Yeah.
Awesome. And where else? Is there any other places online where people can find you and find out more about you and the work you do?
Mostly that. Yeah, that website would probably be the best. There's a Facebook also. And so I'm posting some articles and stuff and just that are, you know, along the same about a lot of the topics. So we update that. And yeah.
Awesome. Well, I highly, highly, highly recommend everybody go watch the movie, really, if you're, even if you are a parent already, because it really, there's just some things that are brought up that make you rethink of some of the things you might be doing now. So definitely great for anybody considering parenthood or on the way, on the path to parenthood currently. So everybody watch it. It's definitely a really great show. And Tara, thank you so much for being on. It was really my pleasure and honor to have you on. And best of luck with everything.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed our chat, and best of luck with all your endeavors.
Thank you. I appreciate it. All right. Well, have an amazing week.
All right. Thanks, Elizabeth.
Bye.
Bye.
All right. I hope you enjoyed that. It really is an awesome documentary. You should definitely check it out. GenerationBabyBuster.com. I had like 4 pages of notes on that thing. Really great. There are authors, a lot of them are authors, so there's books that you can check out and research a little bit more. I think on her website she actually has little clips that you can watch too. So find it on Hulu, check it out at generationbabybuster.com. It's really awesome. And thank you so much for tuning in. We will catch you in a couple weeks with Jamie Harmon and her beautiful baby Jaden. And until then, have a great couple weeks. Love you. Bye.